Hi, I'm Irish Mike, and welcome to DJing BJJ with my co-host,
Ken.
How are you getting on, Ken?
I'm doing good, mate. I'm doing good. How are you?
We're just obviously after doing our interview there.
But with the magic of editing, we're going to drop it in after we've...
Yeah, so I'm actually feeling good about it, so, yeah.
Feeling good, yeah. Yeah, so I'd like to start by addressing the elephant in the room, which was last week's shambles of a show. Whenever I go into... a podcast without like a plan or some notes in front of me, I get a stark reminder of why I
you
should
make
always
notes.
Go in with a plan, because we both, as soon as we stop recording, we're like five different things. We're like, oh, I wanted to talk about that. Oh, I wanted to talk about that. Oh, I wanted to talk about that. But clearly, as soon as we're recording, forgot it all. So,
that's standard, really, isn't it? I mean, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to do the notes, and then I add what I think is hilarious comedy that no one else finds funny. You know what I mean? And then everybody gets to laugh at me, not with me. But I'm laughing all the same, so we're all happy.
It's a tried and tested formula.
Yeah, I mean, it's not broke, don't fix it. It's incredibly broken and it's beyond fixing. Maybe you just keep going with it, you know, like my body.
And this show.
What we do, we kick off with an away day?
Let's do what we always do, is just recap the last week or however long it's been since we chatted. Not that long, not as long as the last time this time. So,
no.
Did another away day at the weekend, so that's two on a trot for me. I did the one with Bobby and Luke before, which we talked about,
you went
the Taurus.
Yeah.
And then, while you bring that up, while I bring that up, I got sidetracked last time talking about not having a plan and didn't really give Andy, the coach, enough of a shout out on the bit about Taurus. I started kind of talking about his lineage and then we kind of got sidetracked.
I led the conversation the wrong direction.
Bigging up Matt House and how nice our gym is.
We have to get that in once every podcast, don't we? How good. You just did it again.
Dom's not paying us for nothing. He's not paying us.
Called me a cunt the other day on Instagram.
Yeah, it was super safe, geezer. Honestly, like anyone that is in the Reading area, please do check out that place. It's a new gym, so obviously people calling through and traffic is good for the jiu-jitsu
community
yeah, in this area.
We're all about helping other people, but in the end, there can be only one.
He was a super safe guy, and I kind of got sidetracked before I'd said that, so like super welcoming, really, really friendly. And a fantastic smile. So yeah, lots of reasons to check out the gym. So we went somewhere else this weekend.
Yeah, we went to Maidenhead Submission Grappling, or Windsor Maidenhead Submission Grappling.
Yeah,
located in Maidenhead.
It's also Monkey Muay Thai, and it's the same.
They share the same gym. Yeah,
share the same gym.
I'm not sure what that is, but it was explained to me. But again, I wasn't listening because I'm generally not.
What was
listening.
Explained to you?
Why it has the two names, but we don't have to talk.
I think
about
it's one of them's in Muay Thai and the other one's grappling.
Yeah, so yeah, but, to, yeah, they're sharing the same gym.
Just to indicate that it isn't just.
Yeah.
A Muay Thai gym, I suppose. But yeah.
So nice shop front anyway.
It's like a high street for those. Look it up, but it's like a high street gym on Maidenhead, like in the pedestrianised bit. So it's like opposite a Nationwide, big glass fronts.
Yeah.
You walk in the swing door and there's probably about a 6 foot square for shoes, and then it's just mats all the way to the end. They've got the Thai pads hung up on the wall for the Thai classes and it was there. And then there's like a little, like, what I think will be a weights room and toilet bit out the back, but it's really like inconsequential.
It's just
floor
not,
space,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it? It's like, you know, a couple of cupboards.
Still a bit of
so,
work to do.
Like I said, I really like that what they've done is just elected to no reception, just as maximise the mat space,
it's cool as well, because the windows, you can just see straight in. Like, you could see when you were grappling, like, you kind of were looking out the window, and there's just, like, some old one in her 50s, like, just looking in, 55, with her messages in her hand, just looking in, going, what the fuck is going on in there with them fellas rolling all over the place?
Got a family of four, like, staring in the window, being like, this is a strange experience.
It's
to
like
watch a Sunday, what was it, it's a Sunday, like, late morning, early afternoon Nogi class as well. So
it was actually cool, and the guys there, as I say, great. I've been there once before in the old place, and
we talked about it on the podcast, but you couldn't remember the name of any of it at that point. So
yeah, I think
in classic Michael fashion, you told us a story with no details. It was a listen and a half, mate. But yeah, now we've been back there, I definitely
we'll
go again. I like their kind of Cobra Kai vibes of it being like a...
Yeah, it's like you were saying, it's like in the 80s when karate gyms were springing up in what they'd say shopping malls. Like,
yeah,
it kind of gives that kind of vibe. Like,
they strip that like a strip mall karate
dojo.
I
hope they don't put any signage on the front of the windows.
They've got like an A-frame, haven't they? That they can just pop out the front.
I wouldn't put anything there. It just looks cool. Maybe something, a banner along the top, so you can still see in the bottom. Because most gyms smoke it out, so you can't see in at all. And I think like it's the biggest selling point. It's like marketing genius. Just being able to see it, because even people just
definitely don't frost those windows.
You have to be able to see in. But I got a good few roles.
What was it? It was a class. So it had like about a bit of stand up to start, bit of techniques,
get more
stand up technique to get warm. There wasn't any warm up, was there?
Proper Carson Gracie.
Yeah, straight into a little bit of like stand up to get you warm. I'll leave that where it is, and then a few techniques. A few techniques from Butterfly Half, and then into five rounds? But
something like that.
What I liked was it's the sort of gym where like
they're laid back afterwards.
If you're up for rounds after the clock is still running, and you can get.
Rory Wise was just calling people out left, right, and centre. It didn't matter what age, height, size.
He's got a match in a couple of weeks, hasn't he?
Yeah, he must have done about 11 or 12 rounds. Had a round with him myself, and I thought it was. I had him darced. Well, I didn't really, but I thought I had, and of course he escaped.
He said you were nowhere near, mate.
Yeah, he'd be accurate, but I have to try and say it on my podcast and big myself up, don't I? I also got Smother Tap by a shout out to Richie, and I have to say, in all my couple of years at jiu-jitsu, it was the one where they put your hand over your mouth and your nose. Not being able to breathe with your hand over your mouth and your nose is actually the most scariest fucking thing.
Is that the first time you've had that?
Steve Conlon did it once to me, and think to show me that, to show me what kind of a move it was. And he just like did it to me, and I swear to God, I tapped him so hard. It was like when I previously said, my first competition when I got guillotined and I hit your man so hard, it was like beating a fucking horse going up the hill to win Cheltenham. I was like, please let me go. It actually terrified me.
I remember I was rolling when that you tapped, and me and the fella I was rolling with, like it was that much of a dramatic tap, kind of like looked over the mats to be like, is that fella all right? I saw it was you. I was like, oh, it's Mark.
Yeah, trust me,
he's melodramatic at the best of times.
He got the tap, and I was just like, it's different to like when you're being choked, that like you kind of feel the wind go or whatever, that you like you breathe through your nose or something.
Yeah, like blood chokes where you can, like a triangle, you can still feel, you can still breathe. And then it's just you feel it closing in, whereas those full-on suffocations, like a bad or good, I don't know what way to describe it, but like a savage mother's milk is the same as well, where you're like being waterboarded. It's that.
I got that done as well shortly, like in the last round when your man called me out, the athletic fucking dude. But
when the highlight reeled you, and then he posted it all over social. Mike had a really good first 3 minutes in that round, where the first half of the round it was all Michael, to be honest. But the tail from social media was Michael in a body triangle getting a deep rear naked choke.
Oh, I tell you one thing, before that picture was taken, he did rear naked choke me, and then I was like, fuck this, and I don't like saying people are strong, but I consider myself strong. So if I'm saying someone's strong, it's not me saying, oh, he's strong. He's younger and more athletic than me. But I always think I have my strength kind of to fall back on, because I'm not athletic and I'm not young. But I've old man strength, and do you know what I mean? Working in construction for 20 fucking something years and being a fucking juice head for 8. You know what I mean? I know you're waiting for the caveat there.
There are your two problems, mate.
They're the reasons why I'm unfit, because of my love of drinking and all this damage the steroids did for over the years. But there's nothing to say that. Anyway. It was good. I don't, you know, he was the better man, and he actually big kicked the shit out of me, let's be honest. But I had some good rounds as well.
It's a good mat. I was chatting to Connor about it this morning. It's a really good even mat.
I had to say it, I hit a guillotine with a second to go, and mounted guillotine, and I was just like I don't care how much I got smashed that whole fucking day. If I can do that kind of shit once, go somewhere and hit it. And your man was actually super sound as well, because he actually double legged me at one stage. And when he let me down, he just let me down so easy. And he could have just
laid you down like a baby.
Yeah, I was like, and I actually said to him, thank you so much for laying me down like that. Because he could have just dropped me and put the wind out of me, you know what I mean? And the two of us were fairly breathing heavy. He was my size, my goal, he's probably a bit younger than me, because I just look a bit ragged. But I was good. I really enjoyed it. And I say, can't say enough good things about it. Tried to put a post up. We had a chat where I said, will we start rating the places we go? But No. I don't want to shit on places.
Like, you can't rate somewhere because then you're kind of like being saying a dickhead. One place is better than another because by the virtue of rating, that's what you're doing. Yeah, whether you want to do it intentionally or not. The side effect of it is, so what I'd rather, like I said, what I'd rather
just pick them up.
Talk about the good shit about, like, to be honest. I'm not going to lie, like, I was someone who's trained in, you know, double figure gyms in lots of different countries. Like, I very rarely come out of it feeling like, oh, that was a shit experience. Like, you know, it's actually an interesting talking point. Like, what on your list of kind of things, like the, like, essentials and desirables do you need for it to be a good mat space? Because for me, it's literally two things: mats and safe people.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, and I don't mean like safe as in like, well, actually both versions, both but, definitions.
But
of
just
safe.
Say we were going to say that every place we go is like that, because technically everywhere we have been has been like that. So since I met you anyway.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, one or two people might roll a bit rougher than others, but like, you don't know that until you roll. And that's not to take away from a gym, because some people just like to roll hard as well and at a different pace to you. So,
and I don't think we've ever been in a gym and they've been like, no, you have to roll with him.
Yeah,
like,
no.
If ever you feel like, you know, it's not your round or you don't want to roll with someone because of whatever, then you just say no. It's like, it's jiu-jitsu.
I'm just all about the showers, man. I just want to fucking call gyms out for not having showers when they have a tap and a sink. It's like, you have the facilities to just run a pipe, but
it's whether they're allowed to put it in, and it's some of them. If they rent the unit, they might not be able to.
That's fair point, but I guarantee they're doing they're doing lots of other. No, because we go for pints afterwards, and there's not worse than sitting in your fucking damp balls in your fresh underpants, and you smell stewing. Like shit,
stewing in the boozer.
And then you're having three or four pints, and having to go home and have a shower. Like.
So showers are desirable for me for sure. Like, if a gym's, especially when for an away day, if a gym kind of like, if you're going somewhere after, a gym almost needs a shower, but like, that isn't an essential.
No, it's
like,
not.
Just because a gym hasn't got a shower doesn't mean I'm not going to train there. Like,
no, I agree. Like, I'm being
SBG that I've talked about ad nauseum, like, there, no showers, still class gym. Farnborough, we've talked about Carlson's, a lot. Yeah, Carlson's at Farnborough, like, no showers, but it's a desirable for sure. But sometimes
I'm just like a princess and want to be spoiled, you know what I mean?
Sometimes I like the griminess of it, though. I like the, you know.
Luke Knox says, I haven't had a cold in 8 years. Fuck the showers.
Spit and sawdust gyms. But yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's.
What do you say? The grimy mats build your immune system. That's the Carlson's logic.
Yes. But so we've got experience there. Definitely be
pint,
back.
Pint after as well. I forgot to mention that on the last one. Like, I wasn't doing dry January. I just had a bit of a heavy December with the injury and everything. I'd gone a bit too heavy on the recreational activities. Yeah. So I decided to take, like, you know, a bit of January and February to have a bit of a sober patch and, you know, get back on the training, get back on the lifting and get back on the diet. About, you know, a couple of weeks in, I decided that January would be quite sufficient.
Yeah.
I didn't need to go any longer. And then managed to obviously hang on to that weekend, which was like the second of February or something.
Yeah, fair play to you, man.
But honestly, juice wasn't worth the squeeze, mate. I don't feel any better.
The only juice that's ever worth the squeeze is steroids.
If anything, I just felt dramatically worse for the entire month. So I wouldn't recommend giving up your vices, guys.
You didn't give up all your vices, like, let's be honest. Like, still,
depends who's asking, mate. Depends who's asking.
Not the way, like, I mean, you really love that crocheting.
Depends if you're a snitch. If you are, you better shut the fuck up. But yeah,
or you get stabbed with that crochet needle.
I kept myself from going insane, sure. I think if I'd have gone Stone Cold Sober, we might have seen a strange chapter in my life, which...
Have you seen that video on Instagram of your man in the ADCC competing in the speedo?
The one in this, to be honest, mate, I saw it on the meme. Like, again, it's something that came into my
through meme culture.
Knowledge through memes before existence, all the stuff. Like, when you've got a swim meet at 12 and jiu-jitsu at 2. And, you imagine you take your misses to your first ever jiu-jitsu match, your first match, you're matched up with that guy.
Yeah.
And it's like a new bird that you've only been seeing for a few months. She's like,
jiu-jitsu isn't gay at all. Your man triangling you in a pair of underpants.
So let me show you, jiu-jitsu's not gay. I'll take you to a competition. It's ADCC, you know, they let them roll out of bounds. It's really savage. It's like, you know, you've got this image in your head. And then your first match, you're against a guy that's like with a perm, wearing a pair of black speedos.
With a dad bod.
Walking your elbows up so he's in high mountain, you can smell his balls on your face. Jeez. Yeah, no. This is not what you pictured when you took yourself to ADCC.
It's like, it was some meme that goes like, and it was that point, Gary realised he didn't want his blue belt.
Honestly, mate, like, well.
That guy is a black belt. And that was a black belt competition. And this just.
It's open reg, so you. I don't know, he might be a black belt. It sounds like you've done a bit of research on it.
It said it was a black belt competition. It was a black belt.
It wasn't one of the opens then. It was actually like one of their.
I started following him, but it was, as far as I'm aware.
Because I thought with ADCC, I thought you registered as like intermediate expert. That sort of. It's a. You know, like a lot of the no-gi competitions where it's not belt level.
Yeah.
It's graded based on your.
I don't know the thing.
Your choice. You can over reg, for example.
Yeah.
You can go in expert as a blue belt, and get your knees eviscerated.
His name is David Cabrera. I don't know. Cabrera. For anyone who wants to watch, the thing, but it's on BJJEE as well, which is very good. But I think he's The thing is, I don't remember if you remember, like back when we first started the podcast, yeah, and I was on about like a black belt could literally fuck you, because you know we were saying jiu-jitsu is gay. That guy like looked close to someone that was gonna fuck someone because he's in his underpants. That's exactly where my mind went.
It's just, all those guys that are devout no gi only guys that give people that train in the gi shit, go train with that fella. You know, go roll some rounds with him. Jokes aside, what's your Well, if you were in an no-gi competition and you're stood opposite him, you know your name comes up on the screen. You know that you're the next match, and
I'm in like Flynn. You know me. I don't give a fuck.
He's along the mat next year.
I mean, to be honest, it's just going to look hilarious on Instagram. And I mean, I'll do anything if it gets a bit of laughs, and I feel like it's not in pushing my comfort zone. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I got body slammed in my first comp, and I wanted the video straight away because I just thought that was fucking hilarious. Like.
It ain't that far away from grappling no shirts and just some combat shorts anyway.
It's just high shorts, really. I mean, as long as his balls ain't hanging out and they're hairy and fucking...
Actually, though, like, is...
A pube in
is
your
less
mouth. Instead of his hair.
Is less layers more gay? Like, the less layers, you know...
I don't know, because if you put on a pair of, like, the spandex or the Under Armour, what would you call them, spats... And like your dick is sticking there. That's way more gay.
Putting it just because there like, in speedos. I don't know.
Because you're supposed to wear shorts with spats. Like everybody knows that.
I'm just saying. Like,
I don't think speedos is gay. I think it's more hilarious.
You'd want it. Yeah. Now I'm actually computing the thought of it. You'd want two layers though, wouldn't you? You'd want it to be at least double layered speedos.
Yeah. You don't want that pube coming out in your face like while he has you in the triangle going. If he was all bald, where's this hair after coming from?
I don't know. I think I'm going to stick to competing in the gi.
I mean, arsewet could be and his ties. You know, I mean, I could go worse than worse. Like, and bring it down.
You've definitely thought about this too much.
I haven't. It's just all running into my mind now. Like the floodgates have opened because someone asked me. You know, I didn't know them thoughts were there, but they were built back in the back of my mind somewhere.
Got anything else from jiu-jitsu news that you want to bring up, or just?
No, I just saw that today, and
I've only been looking at the guy in his speedos.
No, to be honest, it's just everywhere on my feed now, and I'm just like. Let's talk about that. I just thought it was like current event kind of thing in probably social media more so.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you're going to talk about like all these people that I haven't a fucking clue who they are who are in Polaris.
I don't do that. I'll only do that when we've got a guest on to talk about it.
So this week we had Simon O'Brien, who's do you want to give him his, well, if you actually, do you know what, we're not going to spoil it. Listen to the interview. It's he has a very fantastic, what would you call it? Not biography.
I guess it is a short biography, a little introduction, a little descriptor. Those of you that have listened to other interviews will know I like to kind of give it a little bit of razzle-dazzle on the introduction.
Yeah, put the riz on it.
To talk up their accomplishments. However,
So Simon is, he's running Pro Sport Grappling, who, if it took me 10 minutes to remember the name last week's episode.
Yeah, so we.
So if you're going competing in Redden or any of the pro sport competitions, or you know, he's
if you've got an interest in finding out what goes into a jiu-jitsu, putting together up a jiu-jitsu competition, it's a good one to listen to. And if you're from Redden and you're thinking about competing in the Redden event, it's a good one to listen to. If you're like me and Mike, and you want to get us some more listens, it's a good one to listen to.
And on that note, here's the interview.
Okay, so with us today, I think we've got the first guest that actually wrote his own introduction. When we reached out to him to do a little bit of research on the upcoming events and what he's involved in, the reply was Simon O'Brien, Black Belt BJJ, 7th Dan Karate, owner Bristol Dojo, owner Bristol Dojo Gym, owner Showtex and Pro Sports Grappling, producer Polaris, Enyo and some Cage Warriors, a few other bits as well, but that's enough to start. So yeah, actually to read that one because it was quite the introduction and yeah, thanks for joining us today, Simon. So
my pleasure, Ken.
We obviously got you on today to talk about the event going on in Reading, but before that, I like to go back to the beginning as much as I can. So I'd like to talk a little bit about your intro to martial arts. So are you a martial artist / gym owner turned producer, or is it the other way around, a producer turned martial artist?
No, I started training in martial arts when I was 12 years old. So I guess a typical typical story. I was the smallest in the class, always getting pushed around by everybody, and had enough of it, started training. The bullying and intimidation stopped immediately, and I fell in love with the martial arts and been training ever since. So I turned 60 this year, so it's 48 years in the arts.
You're looking fresh, man.
Thank you, buddy. Keep training.
That's it, keep training. Yeah.
My body is broken anyway. I don't know, secret. I'm getting bald spots in the back of my head.
I'm completely broken, it's like inside it's every hour shows on the inside, but yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way.
So were you running the gym in Bristol for a while before you moved into the kind of show tech role and started doing the production? Because I think obviously, like you said, you've got fingers in quite a few pies, like you're involved in some mat rental company as well, there's a lot going on that you've got involvement in, but was it the dojo that came first?
Yeah, so I started training. I'm from Cardiff, and I represented Wales on the national team, fought around the world for 14 years. Some great coaches in Bristol. I moved up to Bristol for my work. Carried on competing, and then when I got to the stage in my early 30s where I couldn't compete anymore, then I just wanted to continue. So I started my own club, usual thing in a small church hall. And at the time, this was in the sort of mid 90s, I decided to take on a full-time unit. I had a lot of friends who also trained in sort of school halls and church halls in sort of Thai boxing and Japanese jiu-jitsu and boxing. So I decided to take on a unit, and we started Bristol Dojo, which was at the time the first sort of multi-art training centre in Bristol.
Nice.
And we're still running today. We just passed our 27th year anniversary. So yes, they're going strong.
I think that's the path, isn't it? It's like you start in the church or an old sports centre that you hire out, and then eventually you get a bit of space, and then you have the dream of owning your own place, and you seem to be going higher and higher the levels that you can go, like to organising your own competitions. I mean, you must be fairly happy with the... I mean, as you say, you're a long time in the game, but I think you're hitting all the accolades that people want to hit along the way.
Are you still involved in the day-to-day running of it now, like with all the other stuff you've got going on with the production and the events, etc.?
Yeah, I always say that the dojo, the gym, is a hobby that just got out of hand. what are you going to do when, more and more people come into your gym? Are you going to suddenly turn around and go, sorry, guys, I'm not doing it anymore? And, we got literally hundreds of people training there, can't send them all home. But it's whole family setup. So my wife helps run it, and my children, they're all in there, all in their 20s now. They help us teach. Former students, been training with me 20 years, they start teaching classes, and it's evolved from there. So I'm still involved. I still teach jiu-jitsu in the gym along with two other black belts, so there's three black belts teaching there. And I also joined my daughter for a good bit of a daddy-daughter time, and we trained a bit of K1.
Nice. Yeah, I had a look at the schedule before we had you on. I'm not sure if you can you still hear us? Yeah, the video just dropped out. As long as you can hear us, that's the important thing. So yeah, I had a look at your schedule. There's obviously a lot of jiu-jitsu on there. Was that always the way, or is it just in recent years the obviously rising popularity of jiu-jitsu has meant that kind of, it seems like it dominates the timetable a little bit? Obviously there's the K1 and the juniors karate on there as well, but yeah, when you started, were you already a black belt in jiu-jitsu as well as karate at that point?
No, again, the whole gym's evolved because I have arts and instructors in my gyms that I'm interested in their art. The great thing about owning the building is I only have people in that I'm interested in training. So, you know, when I got my friend's a Thai boxing coach and he came in, of course I'm going to train Thai boxing.
Yeah.
I can't have an art in there that I'm not interested in, and I'm going to jump in the class. You know, I own the building, I'm going to jump in and I'm not going to sit on the sidelines and watch it.
No.
I'm going to jump in. My son does a lot of teaching there. Dylan, he's my 22-year-old son, so he's I think last year he was the youngest black belt in the UK. He goes black belt when he was 20 years of age. And, you know, he's full-time in there. And again, you know, the jiu-jitsu class, it gets full, you put another class, it gets full,
yeah.
You put another class, kids want to come along, you put another class. So because we've been going 27 years, it just evolves naturally.
The kids, you know, go up and then their kids go, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, you know, when you can't move on the mat, you know, you cut the class in half, you start another class, and then, you know, there's gi and there's no gi, and then there's beginners, and everything just evolves organically when you've been around. I think when you start a new gym, you just sort of hit the timetable with what you think is going to be it's going to be a good starting point, but then the timetable evolves around the people who come through your door. And we've always said, you know, if there's if no one turns up for a class, that class will eventually go. And you know, everyone comes in and they want X, Y, and Z, then we'll put that on. Well, it's not a case of what we want. People vote with their feet.
Yeah.
And you know, the rise of popularity in jiu-jitsu. That's why that sort of timetable has grown. And the gym's evolved that way now, so the whole two matted areas where we've got you know, jiu-jitsu type flooring down there to, you know, just because, as you said, again, we just do so much jiu-jitsu in there.
Yeah.
Would you say jiu-jitsu is your passion and that's why you're pursuing it now, or did it change from karate to jiu-jitsu, or like?
The striking heart, they play a huge toll on your body. There's not many bones in my body that I haven't broken. You know, the arthritis goes in there. I just think that jiu-jitsu, you can tend to train into an older age.
Yeah.
So as I've gone, I still do two K1 classes a week. But jiu-jitsu really takes a lesser toll on my body. And again, you know, I've just spent myself, found myself, you know, training more and more jiu-jitsu.
Nice. Have you got more in the gym, or?
I don't know.
So I was going to say, like, obviously the martial arts came first. How did you develop the skills in the, you know, production side? At what point did you start, get your involvement in events? How did you get involved in that? And how has that built to what you are now, effectively, you know, involved in multiple national and wider events?
Okay, well, in my younger years when I was competing for Wales, I travelled all around the globe, so I got a feel of what competitions are like, and you know, there's good competitions and there's bad competitions, but there seemed to be a pattern of what makes a good competition. The competitions that I love to go on, you know, sort of the ones in sort of Germany, Austria. And Holland, they tend to be really, really nice competitions that you really, really, it's a highlight of a year you want to go to. So, obviously, when I started running competitions myself, that I always try and make competitions that I would want to go to. But when I started training, obviously, it's not my full-time job when I was, a teenager coming through. So, I come from a technical background, so I worked for a company called Siemens, and I was the head of technical support in the field. So, you know, technology, it's second nature to me. My older son Gareth is an infrastructure engineer for Vodafone. So we all the family are really technical. So when I started going to events, I started doing a bit of sort of MMA and sort of K1 judging. And then I would go to an event and I'd have a look at their setup. I said, you know what, you could do this a lot better. And I just kept, you know, I evolved a system for judging that it's still being carried on today. I work with a guy called Paul Sutherland, who's a UFC judge, and we run a promotion called Meltdown. I don't know if you've heard of Meltdown Fighting Championships, but we own that, and we we run that as well. So that's another thing we do. But I know I have a look at it, and I think we could have done a better way with evolving the judging system. So we evolved that, and then it came down to the lighting and just saying, look, guys, at the event, you know, you could use lighting a lot better. You know, your audio could do a lot better. You know, you could do this better and that better. And things just evolved from there. We used to run karate competitions as well, sort of large scale karate competitions. And then when I got my black belt in jiu-jitsu, it was a case of well, why don't we run jiu-jitsu events? So, you know, we were in the MMA events business, we were in the karate events business, you know, from a technical background. So we wanted to go there and we started running jiu-jitsu events. My son competes a lot. He was on the sort of UK national team with Neil Simkin and the rest. So they went on to the Pan Ams. Nice. Neil and Jimmy Johnson took the sort of very first UK junior team out to the Pan Ams, and he just wanted to compete. But the events were pretty few and far between at the time. You know, you're traveling to London, you're traveling to Manchester, you know, you're doing the European Nagas and things like that. The Southwest didn't have very many events.
Yeah.
So this whole thing came together, well, let's put on an event. So we just put on a basic event, and then I just got carried away with it.
So here we are.
So yeah, it really was, you had the skills already and you noticed the gap in the market, so decided to kind of jump in there, and obviously it allowed you allowed the opportunity to compete in more places, so that was a win-win. So
and there was still a lot of competitions that were, I found that jiu-jitsu competitions were just, they were like 10, 20 years behind the rest of the competition scene. You know, if you went to like MMA events, you went to karate events, you went to judo events. You know, it would, you know, competing on jigsaw mats and, you know, just the events were just really sort of slapped together. And again, you know, working with people like Polaris, working with the UFC, working with Cage Warriors, you know, that, you know, walking into, you know, a jiu-jitsu event, like going back in time.
Yeah.
And I just felt that I could use my technical skills from when I worked for a living and sort of the stuff that I did for the for the UFC, for Polaris or whatever, that I could sort of bring that sort of organisation and that skill set into events. And that's where Pro Sport Grappling, you know, came from.
So how does your role vary between what you do with Enyo, Polaris, and obviously what you're doing with Pro Sport Grappling? Is it really with Pro Sport Grappling that's completely your baby, in a sense that, like, you know, everything involved, and then the others you're more in a consultancy role, or because obviously
what does a producer do?
What does a producer do, and how does it vary from promotion to promotion?
Yeah, well, we make the whole a friend of mine asked who ran an MMA event in Bristol, asked me to he was let down by a company, so he didn't have a cage, didn't have any lighting, didn't have any audio. He was let down at the last minute, so he asked me, you know, could I sort of cobble something together in very short notice and help him out, otherwise you'd have to count it. There was an event called Tear Up in Bristol. So we went along there, and you know, apparently we did a good job on there. And then within sort of 2 weeks from that, Cage Warriors rang us. Weeks after doing that, we were in the O2, and it just completely escalated. You know, from that, then Polaris rang us and said, you know, can you come along and do this and work with the UFC? And within sort of 6 months of starting out, then we were...
You hit the big time.
Yeah, we were producing shows. So Polaris, for instance, we, you know, apart from the mats, everything is me and my team. So all the lighting, all the audio, all the sound, all the camera teams, all the broadcast, everything comes from my team. So we go in there and we do a one-stop shop approach. So, you know, you're not getting the light in from one team.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
it's all in house.
Camera team. Yeah, we come along and, you know, instead of using like 30 people and about 5 different vans pulling up outside, I bring one team and, you know, there's about 15 of us. We come in there, we run the whole event. So for the promoter, it's easy. They just deal with us. You know, we come along with the kit behind, and then 7 hours later, then you've got a full show and everything's set up and everything's working together.
That's cool, man. Yeah.
Nice. I was going to ask you a little bit later, but as Polaris has been just been brought up, are you going to be involved in the Grand Prix in Wales in March? Is that you guys doing the production for that? Because that looks like a class card.
For the last, it's our third year now that we've been doing the providing all the production for Polaris, and it's really good because I'm interested in long-term relationships. When you're swapping a production team on every event, you can't sit down afterwards and go, what went well, what didn't go well. So at every event we try to improve, there's always something we can do better. So again, January is a good time, as you can see behind me. I'm setting all the stuff up for Enyo and for Polaris now, getting the work done, making changes. Every event we'll do will be slightly different and slightly better, hopefully, than the event before. And because, again, we're working with these large organisations, event after event, it just keeps getting better and better. And Polaris is the team to work for. They're really good guys on there. The guys from Tatami and the guys from Scramble.
Yeah.
Awesome team to work with, and they tell me what they want to do, and I try and make it happen.
So do you ever have any input in the matchups, like of who'd be fighting? It's just the producing and running of the show more so than the.
I just do the producer, make sure everything runs the plan. They sort of give me a, this is what they want to achieve, a rough plan, and I'll go away and then I'll make it happen. From the large video walls, the camera teams, and everything in there is ours. And that again comes from my sort of background when I worked for
Siemens. Yeah,
so nice.
When we did some large projects, what we would do is we would build it. We would build it up off-site, make sure everything works, and then we sort of would strip it down, take it to the end user, and then rebuild it. And that's all we do for our events. So we'll build it here, and then we'll develop it, we'll test it, we'll make sure everything's working together. Then we strip it down, we put it in the vans, we take it in, and we build it. So we're not building anything from scratch. Everything is already built. We're just unplugging it, transporting it, and then replugging it in, and it goes.
Have you ever thought of doing any invitationals then? That's something that you could do matchups yourself, as you have all the kit and you have your grappling organisations going. Do you know the way invitationals seem to be the hot thing now?
Yeah, they do. Again, this is my tie up with Joanne. I mean, Joanne there, she takes care of all the matching. She puts that together. And again, Joanne approached me because she always came to Polaris, and then she said, I want to get this sort of female professional jiu-jitsu show off the ground, and can you come and help me do it? So she takes care of all the matching, and I take care of all the production. Okay. I think if I try to do the matching as well,
it's too much.
Yeah,
it can be quite hairy, doing the production and sort of dealing with the fighters and the matchups again.
I suppose with you, the relationships you have, you kind of don't really want to be going out doing your own thing that way either, because you're involved so much with the producing of other things that might. It might look like throwing a bit of shade, maybe.
Yeah, if you have a look at any of the matches that Joe put together, look fantastic on there. You need to be on that and not be distracted. The same with Meltdown. I do all the it's mine and Paul Sutherland's show, so they do all the he does all the matching, and I'll come along with the production. I do the same with Jack and Richard Shaw, for their promotion. So they do all the matching, then I'll come along with the production. And it seems to work well when I can focus on, presenting the show, putting everything together, making sure it runs, and then someone else puts together a really good card.
Nice.
And that seems to be how my sort of relationships build.
That's good. Do you find the ask is very different from you as a producer when you're doing an MMA event compared to jiu-jitsu, in terms of what the people you're working with expect from you, or even what the people that are going to be there experiencing what you produce, if that varies much?
I mean, it's if you actually take away the environment of what's happening, the actual structure of what's going on, there's lighting, there's sound, there's a camera team, there's a broadcast. So there's a huge amount of crossover. I would say the difference between producing an event like Polaris or Enyo or Cage Warriors, even the ones on the mat, ones on the cage, it's probably 95% the same sort of setup. The structure is also very different. The feel is very different. The environment is very different. Because you go into a jiu-jitsu match, you can hear a pin drop. You go into an MMA show.
That's really why I asked. Because as a fan who's been to both sorts of events, it's chalk and cheese. As a spectator experience. So I wondered if that, is something that you have to consider when you're kind of setting up everything for those different spheres.
Yeah, we tend to for jiu-jitsu events because we do talk a lot. We got comms over the headsets. We're usually in the back room or at the back. Or MMA, we're usually in the room because we don't disturb anybody because everybody else is making a load of noise anyway.
Nice. With Pro Sport Grappling, obviously, there's about 8 events now in the next 6 months that are lined up in terms of jiu-jitsu alone when I was looking on Smooth Comp. Are you involved in the location selecting of that? I know it's kind of a loaded question, to be honest, because when I look through it, you see places like Brighton, you see places, dotted over the country like Swansea, big cities that you expect really on to have a jiu-jitsu open. And then in that list is little old Reading. were you involved in the location selection? Or if so, what goes into the picking where you set up these events?
Well, when I was competing for big karate events, one of my favourite places to compete was at the Rivermead. And I competed there in the old building, going back in the 80s and 90s, and I kept saying to our team, I'd love to go back to Reading. Some of my favourite memories of competing is in Reading, and we tend to have meetings every sort of Monday, and we sort of discuss things. And I think probably for about a year and a half now, I've been saying I really want to go to Reading. I want to go back there and do an event where I used to compete. Because I had a really nice moment where I used to compete nationally at Crystal Palace, and then I went and produced a show there for Contenders, and I was back at Crystal Palace actually producing a show where I used to compete sort of 20, 30 years ago, and it was really, really nice. It's almost like I'd gone full circle.
Like a little rhyme.
Absolutely, and I'd love to do that with in Reading. And I still spend a lot of time in Reading. I've got friends who live in Whitley, and it's always had a sort of special memory, for myself for competing there. I used to compete there 3 times a year.
Amazing.
And I said to the guys, I really want to go to Reading. And I said to my son Dylan, who helps me plan, I said, have a look, is there any comps in Reading? Is there anything around there? Because the last thing we want to do is go and step on anybody else's toes, because we want to be working together in the jiu-jitsu community. And he came back and he said, well, I can't find any jiu-jitsu events in Reading. Probably the nearest is around Oxford, and then you've got like Swindon and London. I went, right, okay, fine. And I got on to Rivermead, and they said, we'd love to have you here. So brilliant, we're going to Reading. I'm really looking forward,
So are we, we're hoping that touch wood, we don't get any injuries, that we'll be on the mats there. So.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be competing, and our gym will definitely have a good turnout. It's nice to see, obviously, in the last couple of years, a couple of other jiu-jitsu gyms. So there's now 3 jiu-jitsu gyms in the area, and now to have an open as well, you've made it like complete jiu-jitsu. It's its own little Reading's got its own little jiu-jitsu hub now. So
you put extra pressure on.
I just explained. Now, me coming to Reading is mainly a selfish reason.
Well,
we're delighted.
I love going there.
It's nice.
Honestly, from competing in my last competition, I was awarded my 6th Dan. Back in the day, I got that presentation. I was, I think, one of the youngest senior black belts in the country. That was awarded to me in Reading, and again, it's always got a special place for me. And I just think coming back there, that's going to be sort of full circle for me. And hopefully we'll just make that a regular thing. If we can get enough support, we'll go there and we'll run 2 events a year there. And we'll sort of just help develop that platform. And if you've been to competitions, I think you'll find the pro sport grappling will be a little bit different to most other competitions you've been to. We're a full-time production company.
That's a beautiful segue there, Simon, because I was going to ask, our coach always speaks about how when he was coming up, when he was coming up through the coloured belts, it was like, you had the IBJJF London, you had the Europeans, and maybe 1 or 2 little regional tournaments that were on, like you say, puzzle mats, right? And now you've got usually 2 or 3 events every weekend that that are on, you know, to pick from when it comes to jiu-jitsu alone. So someone like yourself who's involved in so many events, what do you think it really takes to make an event stand out from the crowd? What do you do to pro support grappling to give you that unique selling point?
From the age of 12, I've been going to events, and they're not all the same. Some events are fantastic, and some events are quite lackluster. I think if you were doing, you know, if you had a full-time job and you were doing like two events a year, you're never really going to get into the swing of it. You're going to be limited what you can do. It's little things, and obviously competing with my son, it's always been an issue. Like, for instance, you go in. Imagine your first competition. You go in there with your parents or with your gym, and you guys, you know, when you're bringing your white belts along, what mat am I on? Where am I? When am I on? Okay, what time am I on? What area?
Mike's like that now. He's competed. He's competed more than 20 times, but he'll still be like that now, mate.
So as a coach, people are constantly coming up. When am I on, coach? What area am I on? Which one? And nobody really knows what's going on. Smooth comps happen a lot. But I was sitting at an airport about 3 years ago, and for an airport, there are tens of thousands of people piling in there. None of them know which gate they're going. None of them know what time their flights take off, and they don't know when to go through. And what do? They conjugate and they have a look at the board, which is a huge board. They do exactly the same in train stations. And I suddenly said to my son, I said, we've got like 100 video wall panels. You know, those big video walls that we put up in Polaris that we relay the feed through. We own video walls.
Yeah.
Okay. And we've got the technical capability. He said, why don't we just link that into the online schedule? And then we'll put up like a huge 5-meter video wall. So as soon as people come in, they can see when their match is on. So for instance, that's what we do now. You walk into our event in Reading, you walk straight through the door, and you'll bump into an airport-sized LED wall, and you'll know, and that's live, that's updated every 10 seconds, so you'll know exactly when your match is on. So as a coach, all you've got to say is, go look at the video wall, and it's on there. You know, you can get this on your phone, but I mean, as a competitor, your phone's probably in the bag.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to keep going into your bag, and then you know, you're opening your phone, go into the app, and then refreshing it. But no, we put it on the screen. So.
See, you're speaking like someone that's competed. You know what people are looking for, because that's exactly the issue. Because you're always going to someone else, when am I on? And someone that doesn't know the smooth comp, how it works, and then you have to refresh it every now and again, and then they don't always go like clockwork. It's killed
that conversation dead. Obviously, in my own team, nobody asks anymore when they're on.
Yeah.
There's other little things, like my son competed in the, he's been competing since he was sort of 4 years of age when he came on the mats, and he's won the British, he's got a British title at every single belt up to, and he's just got his black belt now, so hopefully that's his aim now, is to be British champion in his weight category. So all through his junior belts, all through his adult belts, he's been sort of British champion. And when he got his brown belt, someone came in, you know, we were up in Coventry, and then the guy came in for a takedown. And, Dylan went down for a takedown. He took the guy down, and the guy did one roll, and he was outside the area, because they only had 5-meter areas. So when he got a takedown, the guy had a look. He seen the area was like, you know, only a sort
easy
of half. So he rolled, and then they had the reset back standing, okay? And that cost him the match. And I said, you know, why, if the IBJJF is saying that, okay, you should be competing on 8-meter areas, why are people out there providing competitions going when you've got 5-meter areas? So I looked for roll-out Dollamore mats that would be 8-meter areas. I couldn't find any anywhere. Just couldn't find any that you could buy. So I had to have them made. So again, so Pro Sport Grappling, now we have, I think we're the only ones in the UK, that we have IBJJF spec 8-meter areas.
So other than the IBJJF London, really, this is probably the only comp in the UK where you're actually going to get enough mat space that you can work a little bit of stand-up without fear of running out of bounds.
Yes. Yeah,
I think we'll clip that. If that ain't a selling point to get more people to you and the few listeners we have, they'll definitely...
Referees as well. I've had the referees keep coming on to me, that the referees have got to keep resetting, all the time, reset to the middle, and it just stops the flow of the match, you know. And a lot of our events now are recognised by the UKBJJA, so they, you know, they've been told that, you know, we've been told that they view us as sort of the gold standard of events. You know, we put on an event in Wales, and they've said rather than them running national championships, they would prefer to adopt ours, and ours is recognised then as the national championships, yeah, because we've got 8 metre max, because we use national level referees. You know, again, there's nothing worse than going on then, you're getting refereed by a guy in a t-shirt and a jeans who's, you know, who's purple belt in the club that the guy you're fighting with, you know.
Yeah.
Referees are the biggest, you know, biggest complaint that people have. So we bring in, you know, Ito and Marcelo Copper and, you know, the people you're going to have on the mats at the IBJJF London. So you have the mat size, you have the IBJJF, you have the referees that you're going to have at that level. So you can't complain about the setup, you can't complain about the referees. If you lose, guess what? It's down to you. You can't blame anything else.
Yeah, but some people always will find an excuse anyway.
We'll find a way, mate. We'll find a way if we don't, I'm sure.
So we had a choice. Either use 5 metre mats or spend tens of thousands of pounds and get my own. So, you know...
They'll pay off in the long run, mate.
I couldn't do it. I had to do it. I know why people do it, because tends to be UK sports centres are quite small. And moving mats around, you know, is that, you know, we used to have 2 or 3 vans just strapped with mats. If I had a smaller area, maybe 2 vans. But I know the reason why. But at the end of the day, we're here to support the jiu-jitsu community. And if the, you know, if at world level, you know, it's all agreed that you need 8 metre mats, then, you know, and I want to take on the responsibility of putting on events, I have to supply 8 metre mats.
Yeah.
You know, the excuse that, yeah, but it's more difficult to move around, you know, there's more mats to move around, you know, sports centres, but you need to find the bigger centres and you need to do it. And yeah. I take that responsibility, you know, really seriously. I have a response. If you put on an event, it has to be for the right reasons. You know, it has to be because you think you can contribute something. Either to an area that hasn't got, it's not represented, or you think you could do a better job.
Nice. Fair point. Well made, mate. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Yeah. One of our lads actually competed at the one in Brighton. Paddy was at their one in Brighton. I think it was towards the tail end of last year you had one?
Yeah, it was, yes.
Yeah. So him and Barnsley went down and did that one. They've been down to Brighton twice, once for theirs and once for the other. Where is it you do your one in Brighton?
So it's at Molscombe.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, because
some things we've done for this year as well. We brought in a ranking system.
Yeah, I saw that through your link tree that you've got all the rankings now. Is that what, to kind of almost make like a league within your pro sport grappling kind of umbrella?
Well, as we're sort of spreading out, we're doing less MMA events, and again, you know, the move more to more jiu-jitsu events and MMA events is like a jiu-jitsu event will tend to finish around about sort of 6 o'clock. We've got a 2-hour pack-up, okay? An MMA event usually finishes about 11 o'clock and I've got a 5-hour pack-up. You know, there's only so many 3 o'clocks in the morning that I can do. So I'm not taking any more MMA commitments on. You know, I'll still support the people that I work with, but I'm not taking on any more MMA-type work, and I'm moving more towards jiu-jitsu. My gym is reflecting moving more towards more and more jiu-jitsu, and that's the way my company wants to
the culture is like that now as well. The martial arts culture seems to be booming jiu-jitsu at the moment as well, like you can see more gyms springing up everywhere.
It's more palatable. Like, I don't know, obviously you've done striking, I've done striking, you haven't, but like as someone walking in off the street, jiu-jitsu is a much more palatable sell to a general public than getting punched in the face. I think, like, you know, as a to compete and like get involved in it, it's much easier. So I can kind of see why that is. Obviously,
but that's doing so many events now.
Yeah,
you know where you finish in the event. The podium results will tell you where you finish, but maybe over 3 or 4. Competitions, where do you stand? How about all these people? I'm pro sport grappling gold medalist, but so am I, but so is he. I'm like, no, hang on a minute. So what we're going to do now is all your points will add up throughout the year.
That's cool, yeah.
We'll have an overall winner for each belt. Right,
to be fair, I think that'll drive more people to you as well.
You do that with teams as well, yeah? So like the different affiliations and that you can...
So what we'll do then is, and again, you know, it's our responsibility not just to put on events, you know. Our events really are just not to enable people to do jiu-jitsu. I mean, you can do jiu-jitsu anywhere. Our job is to provide a platform to take people from, you know, coming in off the street for their first, off a club for their first event, you know, as a white belt, and then maybe going off and, you know, going to the ADCC trials, going on to the undercard of Polaris, moving on to Enyo, going into the Europeans. Our job is that development. We can't just turn up, run an event, and go home. So the top people in our the competitors that come with us, then we'll reward them by giving them free entry for a year, you know, which is, you know, £700-800, so they'll save a bit of money there. And if there's a team that's doing really well, that means there's something special going on in their academy. So likely, you know, at the end of the year, we're going to give them £1,000, and hopefully that academy then going to fund them to maybe go help them go to the Euros. Maybe, you know, we'd pay for a couple of them to go to the sort of East or West Coast trials for the ADCC.
That's really cool.
That's wicked. There needs to be more people that are willing to do that. And yeah, it sounds like you're really putting on an event for the athletes as well as, you know,
It seems
like it's an event for everyone, you know. So you can tell you're a martial artist, and you know you care about the people that are on the mats as well as those that are around them. So obviously, there's only so many people. Like, there's lots of people now getting into jiu-jitsu. There's only so many like people that can compete to a level where they can actually do it for a living, and there's only so many people that can run their own gym. So as someone like yourself, that's obviously got a business that is involved in the sport, but not directly doing any of the two kind of key things that people generally associate with making money from jiu-jitsu. Have you got any advice for anyone that would like to get into maybe, you know, the other sides of jiu-jitsu? You know, you're involved in so many different things. Have you seen like different roles or maybe different kind of skill sets that young people that want to build a career in jiu-jitsu can get involved in?
It's about following your passion. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's jiu-jitsu or whatever, you know, if you do something, you must have a passion for it. Then it doesn't become, it's not a job anymore, is it? You know, if I always say, people say, every weekend I'm at some sort of fight show. I say, wouldn't you like a weekend off? I say, well, if I had a weekend off, do you know where I'd be? I'd be at a fight show. So I may as well be there anyway, because that's what I'm going to do. And that's my passion, you know. I work 7 days a week. I don't work at all. I don't even work one day, because, you know, if I won the lottery tomorrow and, you know, I didn't need to earn an income, I think I'd be doing just exactly the same. You know, it's my passion, and you should follow that. Obviously, you know, people need to earn a living, and but I think that if you're passionate and you're good at what you do, then I think you can earn a living at it. But you can't put the money first. You know, if you go into run an event because you want to make a few quid, then that's
secondary.
You're not gonna last. You can open a gym because you think you're opening a gold mine. Then, you know, it's not gonna happen. People follow people who are passionate about what they do, and I think you just need to just follow your passion, whether it's, you know, hang gliding or painting pictures or throwing yourself off mountains,
with a parachute.
Whatever your passion is, you know, just go and follow it.
They say if you find a job you like, you'll never work a day in your life, isn't it? That's the old saying.
That's absolutely bang on, you know. Mm. I started, martial arts for a practical reason, because I kept getting bullied at school, and that, you know, was a horrible time in my life. However, if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't be where I am now. Mm. So that negative is now turned into positive. All my family are involved in there, you know. All my kids are black belts. My wife helps me run the gym. Wouldn't be where I am without that bad time.
That's cool, man. Yeah, that's good. Have you anything? Have you any more questions?
I was going to say, that's follow your passion, and it being a family business is probably as good a place to end it. I was just going to say, yeah. Is there anything else that you've got going on that you want to plug or make people aware of?
Obviously, there's you really should know. Try and get Joanne on there. You know, she's hugely passionate about, you know, promotion of European level female jiu-jitsu. That's a passion of for her, and you know, it's my it's my privilege to be able to support her and give her the platform to be able to follow her dream. So,
Yeah, she's been on our friend's podcast, Humans Jiu-Jitsu podcast.
Yeah. And
we've spoke on DMs. Like we were supposed to get on last year before we got a bit hectic with life. So we will hope, and you can put in the good word for us as well.
I'll mention it. You can get her on anytime. And obviously, this Meltdown Fighting Championships, I do with Paul Sutherland. So that's a really good MMA show. Where again, because of the production that we've got, we're able to put up LED walls, with a 26-foot cage with an overhead lighting rig, and all the fancy stuff that we use in our high-end production, we bring into that. And obviously this Polaris coming up, the ICC in Wales, and it was sold out on the first time we've actually sold out on the ground level floor. So we've opened that's sold out.
Opened up the next level. I was going to say, do you need anyone to carry some lights or something into that one? Because that's a hell of a card, mate. I'm going to be
the
looking
thing
forward
is the prize, but I got to realise is those guys have been going 10 years.
Yeah.
I always joke to Ben, when he comes to me and he says, this event sold out because, Wales sold out, and Doncaster sold out. And, it seems every event they're putting on that sold out. So there you are. Overnight success. But they've been at this for 10 years. They've been slogging away from it, and how many times they've wanted to walk away with it and just been it, they stayed with it. And it's only the last 2 years that it's really gone through the roof. Coincidentally, since I've been producing it,
the production values are really high on the product. It's one of my favourite shows to watch.
The guy's been working 10 years for this, so what you're seeing now is the end result of 10 years hard work from the guys.
All the pieces coming together.
I'm really pleased, and obviously that two of those events last year were nominated for the UFC Fight Pass and Event of the Year. Jits Magazine Event of the Year for Polaris 25, the GP in Evervale. So
that's good, man. That's good accolades for yourself as well.
Speaks for itself. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Simon. Yeah, cheers, mate. Obviously kept you longer than we planned, but we really appreciate it. I've really enjoyed the chat, mate. So
thanks for your time. If we're ever down around the area, we might give a shout into the gym, because you're not that overly far away. Like we like to actually go around and train in other gyms on odd Sunday, so if you've an open mat on a Sunday.
And that's another great thing about jiu-jitsu. You don't tend to not find in any other martial arts, Somebody wants to come into the gym, somebody's working in the city, no one ever charges for it. Yeah, just come down and you're welcome. And I hope jiu-jitsu doesn't lose that. That's one thing I've noticed is different over that.
We always say the community is the best community about.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And we'll see you in Reading.
Reading. Might have a pint afterwards if you're allowed to drink, because I'll definitely win, lose or draw. I'll be having a few pints anyway. don't have to get in the car afterwards. You just have to cross the road and cry myself to sleep. But thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks again, mate.
Okay. Thanks, Ken. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, thanks to Ken for cleaning up my train of thought there at the end, and hope you enjoyed the interview as much as we did. And I think the ranking system he talked about, and you can tell from listening to him that jiu-jitsu is his passion and martial arts is his passion, and he's more there for the athletes, I think, than just, he sounds like a guy that's not trying to make a quick buck. It seems to be a product of what's happening, and big him up,
Talking to him, he seems like he's probably made a few bucks, and now he's into the passion project stage of his life. So that's to the benefit of all grapplers far and wide, to be honest, because it seems like a really cool event. Yeah, we've linked him before. We'll put his socials in the bio, but check him out. And in his link tree, he's got the Pro Sport Grappling League tables and stuff. And I actually forgot to mention that to him in the interview. I had a look at that before we had the call with him, and it's the interface. So All Stars, which we've talked about before, good events also, they do have their own internal league system, but navigating it and the interface on their website, you've registered for it. It's not the best. It feels like a step back in time.
It's trying to find your name even.
And that's
difficult.
kind of what Simon was saying about jiu-jitsu events being a little bit outdated, and it feels a bit like that with...
I think they're probably grabbing the money and not putting it back in, whereas he's putting it back in.
I don't want to cast any aspersions to All Stars. They're still good events, and
I'm still going to compete. I'm not throwing shade on them. We've spoke to him, and we haven't spoken to anyone from All Stars. So
actually, fuck him. Yeah.
If you are a producer or a owner of All Stars, we're more than likely have you on, and you can speak your side. Don't listen to two bluebells.
You can tell me to go fuck myself at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the interface on their league table thing to keep talking positives is it's absolutely class. Really nice, easy to navigate. Looks awesome. So I've got the hiccups. Check it out and give it a look. But yeah. What do they have to do, Mike?
Like, follow, share, subscribe, lads. Follow the page, share it with people, share the podcast. Go on to Spotify, click the star button, give us 5 stars, please. You know, I mean, we're back up and running again, and we got good numbers last week considering we've been away so long, so we do appreciate the listens, lads.
Yeah, cheers for the guys that reached out in the chat and said it was nice for us to be back. Look,
yeah.
You know, that was one of those episodes, guys, to give you a peek behind the curtain. If it was just me running this, I would have not let that go out. It's the beauty of having Mike here is if ever I've got doubts on something, Mike's like, nah, fuck it.
Unfortunately, I put everything out.
We're gonna put it out. So yeah, we got the flow back a little bit more this week. I think, you know, I've had fun doing the episode, and it was cool having Simon on.
It was hard even talking to each other, and the first one was kind of hard. And I thought we should have covered that in the intro, but we didn't have the click. Like, I think we're more back on it now.
Back on it. But I think me being back on the booze helps, mate. It smooths the whole thing out. But do, like Mike says, like, comment, subscribe. Shout out to our sponsors, friends and affiliates. You've got DGEN10, the code to use at xmarshall.com, DGENPOD at Flow State, and Salt DGEN for 10% off at saltandstorm.co. But if you look at the
bio,
it's all there. You can copy and paste it. And yeah, anyone that wants to reach out, get involved, WhatsApp community, Instagram, so Spotify, like Mike says, 5-star rating.
Or if you want to come on the podcast, you know anyone that wants to come on the podcast.
Look, we're not picky, lads.
Yeah.
Just give us a shout. If you
don't even have to do jiu-jitsu. If you've got an interesting story and you think someone will like it.
You don't even have to have an interesting story. If you've got a mouth and you can speak, it will help us fill some time.
I mean, like, we were two lads running the podcast.
Content's content at this stage. But yeah, guys. Mike, you want to sign off?
Good luck.
All right, much love. Play it to your nan.